John chapter 8, today we're going to begin reading in verse 12, and we'll read through verse 20. Then Jesus spoke to them again, saying, I am the light of the world. He who follows me shall not walk in darkness, but have the light of life. The Pharisees therefore said to him, You bear witness of yourself, your witness is not true. Jesus answered and said to them, Even if I bear witness of myself, my witness is true, for I know where I came from and where I am going. But you do not know where I come from and where I am going. You judge according to the flesh, I judge no one. And yet, if I do judge, my judgment is true, for I am not alone, but I am with the Father who sent me. It is also written in your law that the testimony of two men is true. I am one who bears witness of myself, and the Father who sent me bears witness of me. Then they said to him, Where is your Father? Jesus answered, You know neither me nor my Father. If you had known me, you would have known my Father also. These words Jesus spoke in the treasury as he taught in the temple, and no one laid hands on him, for his hour had not yet come. In 2004, Melissa and I went to Kenya with a small group of others from this church and a couple other churches for a missions trip. One night we had what started out as a bit of a terrifying experience. We were in bed, the windows were open because of it's so hot. We were all tucked in beneath our mosquito net, which is quite an experience and an adventure to get in and get under it. And so once you're in, you want to stay in as long as possible. But we were all tucked in under our mosquito net when we heard something in our room. Now, it was pitch black. We weren't just in Kenya. We were in rural, remote Kenya. In fact, the stars at night felt like you could actually touch them. Because there's no other light going on. There's no pollution, there's no light. So it was right there. And so once you turned off your lights to go to sleep, it was as dark as anything I've ever experienced. We were in an area in which, just to tell you what it was like, the pastor who organized the conference that we were there to take part in, he was emailing me months before the trip, telling me that we needed to hurry and get our hotel booked as soon as possible, and he was adamant about it. Every time he talked to me, I need the money for the hotel, I need the money for the hotel, and I couldn't figure out what the hurry was. In fact, after a little while, I started to feel like maybe I was getting scammed, because he kept asking for the money, and it was in such a hurry about it. And then when we got there, I discovered that this was the only place in the area that had running water. And the pastor knew that that would be really important to us as Americans, that we would really like to be in a spot that had running water. And so we really were out in the middle of nowhere. So that night, the room was dark. It was impossible to see anything, but we could hear something moving around inside the room. Now, those of you who know me well know this already. I'll be honest with those that don't know me. I'm basically scared of anything that's an animal. I am not a nature guy. I don't see God in nature. I think one of the greatest miracles of God was the invention of air conditioning. Me and nature don't get along. And so if I hear something in my room here, I'm not real comfortable. But in rural Kenya, as I'm in my room, in my bed, and I can hear something running around, I started to panic a little bit, and my mind started going not to what it might be, no big deal, but what it could be. You know, is it a snake? Is it a scorpion? Is it some sort of animal? And so Melissa and I laid there in bed. We were laughing at some parts and scared at other parts, trying to convince ourselves that it was nothing to worry about, but getting more and more worried as we heard this thing move around more and more. The realization was we needed light. We had to find out what this thing was so that we could know what we were dealing with and what we would need to do. So we finally got out from under our mosquito net and got to the lights, flipped them on to discover that our intruder was a field mouse. You know, the kind with a little body and big ears. He was actually really cute. And so we laughed about it then, and we still laugh about it now. But for our sake, the light had revealed that there was nothing to fear, and we were able to go back to sleep. See, light does two important things. It either it shows or it reveals what we've been hiding, what we've been hoping that no one else would see. But it also shows what we've been missing, what we never even knew was there. In our text today, Jesus declared, "I am the light of the world." That declaration means that Jesus didn't come to show us, it means that Jesus came to show us what we've been missing and to reveal what we've been hiding. Understand, Jesus did not bring light, He is the light. This is not something Jesus does for us, it is what being near Jesus does automatically. The closer you get to God, the more you see Him and the more you see ourselves. We can't see Jesus without seeing ourselves. There are two things that are clearly seen in God's presence: His character and our condition. There are things that we have to see, or else we will live in constant fear and anxiety. There are things about us that have to be seen, or else those things will become the source of constant accusations from the enemy and shame from our own hearts. This morning, I want us to talk about the connection between light and life. How light reveals what life was meant to be, and it also reveals what we have limited life to. My prayer is that we will get close enough to Jesus to see Him as He is, so that He can show us that He knows us as we are, and that His light will bring us out of hiding and lead us into the life that can't be hidden by darkness. Lead us to the life that we've always been meant to live. After Jesus had offered grace to the woman that was caught in adultery, grace that provided her with forgiveness but also called her to change, John says that He said to them, to the crowd that He had been teaching before all this started, but also to the Pharisees that were still close enough to hear Him, "I am the light of the world. He who follows Me shall not walk in darkness but have the light of life." The interaction with that woman caught in adultery had shown Jesus as the light. He had revealed the hearts of her accusers. Those that had come demanding justice began to see their own condition, their own sin, so much so that they no longer were willing or able to condemn the woman that had offended their sense of righteousness. The light of Jesus, the light that is Jesus, had revealed to them that they weren't as holy as they thought they were. But it also revealed to this woman not just her sin, but His grace. The light of Jesus had shown her that there was another way to live, shown her that there was hope and healing, forgiveness, that there was change available to her. Not just that He was not going to hold her accountable, but that He was going to create a new way to live that He would be accountable for. If you remember from last week, it is grace that calls us to go and sin no more. There is a grace that forgives us, but then there is a grace that changes us. That's why we move from grace to grace. It's why the Scripture says, "But He gives more grace." If all we needed was to be forgiven, then what kind of transformation is available to us? If all we needed was to be forgiven, how could we be new creation? We'd still be the same creation, just with different consequences. But a new creation means you need the grace to be changed, means we need the grace to be transformed. Again, this is what the light does. It shows us what we are missing, and it reveals what we've been hiding. Two things that happen together, because it's what we are hiding that actually keeps us from seeing what we're missing. We work so hard to hide that we can't see what's being offered to us. Our eyes are so inward on what's broken in us that we can't see the healing that's being offered to us. It's why He has to show us what we're hiding. Because if we don't, we'll never see what we've been missing. We'll never see that the things we hide keep us from living life as it was intended to be. 12-step programs have this little saying: it's our secrets that keep us sick. It's what we hide that keeps us from the life that God created us for. So what does it mean to walk in darkness? Jesus said that those who follow Him shall not walk in darkness. 1 John chapter 1, verse 6 tells us that if we have fellowship with Jesus, then we cannot walk in darkness. So if we have these promises that walking in His light brings us out of darkness, one of the things we have to ask ourselves and answer is, what does it mean to walk in darkness? Darkness is the absence of light. Light and darkness don't have fellowship with each other, meaning they don't exist alongside each other. When a light is turned on, the darkness doesn't diminish, it gets dispelled. Walking in darkness is not a synonym for walking in sin. Walking in darkness is what leads us to sin. See, walking in darkness is walking on our own. It's walking with the world, walking without the light of Christ. Walking in darkness is what Jesus referred to as the blind leading the blind. It's trying to find our own way rather than submitting our lives to the need for His way. Walking in darkness is viewing people from a worldly point of view. It's not being transformed by the renewing of our minds. It's conforming to the pattern of this world. It's thinking that what we see is all that there is, and that what we are hiding is actually going to stay hidden. See, we're all tempted, even trained, to walk in darkness. We are trained to figure it out ourselves, to do the best that we can, to stay the way that we are. Walking in darkness hopes that things will get better without ever addressing issues. It gives up and it gives in quickly. It's easily frustrated, quickly and carnally satisfied, and unwilling to be changed, but wants everything around us to change. So many of us come to Christ and we want our lives to change. We just don't want to be the ones that do the changing. We're looking for an answer. We're looking for Him to do something for us that only we can do for ourselves. Here is a truth. God will always do His part, but He will always make us responsible for our part. There are the things that only God can do and we can't do them. But there are things that God requires we do and He won't do them for us. And so when we walk in darkness, we have this tendency to hope things change, but never step into the change. We have so many reasons. Someone's depending on us, or someone will be upset with us, or this will happen, or that will happen. And all of that is us walking in darkness. Because the moment we see the light, we're called to go toward it. The moment He shines, we have to embrace the lights that's shining. And so we go through this, and some of us, you're sitting here right now, and we are in these cycles of life that never seem to change. We get excited about the change we're about to cause. We get excited about the new step we're going to take. And 2 weeks in, we do what we used to do. A month in, we go back to what we've done before. Why? Because we're continually walking in darkness. Listen, don't let it be a synonym for walking in sin, because that brings condemnation. Understand what it is. We're not seeing life as it was meant to be. We're not seeing life as we were created to live it. If you are one who repeats cycles, you're walking in darkness. It's what it amounts to. You're doing your thing. You're doing it the best you know how. You're doing it the way everyone else has done it, or the way you've tried to do it every other time. We cannot walk with Christ and walk in darkness at the same time. Jesus said that He is the light of the world, but that wasn't the end of His statement. He wasn't just announcing Himself. He was also calling us to respond. He said, "He who follows Me shall not walk in darkness, but have the light of life." We talk about this often, but what does it mean to follow Jesus? It's the third step of discipleship. Deny yourself, take up the cross, and follow Me. It's the command that Jesus gave each of His disciples, and that I believe He has given each one of us. It's not a suggestion, it's a requirement. But it's not just what God has called us to do, it's who He created us to be. See, we were created to be followers. We were not created to make our own way, to blaze our own trail, to create our own destiny, or even to fulfill our own dreams. We were created to follow Jesus. In Genesis chapter 1, humanity was the final piece of creation. We were created in God's image, but before God created us, He created a world for us. Everything that we would ever need, from air to breathe, to food to eat, to a garden to live in, to relationships of interdependence, were all provided by God for us. There was no mystery because there was no darkness. Remember, darkness is simply something that's hidden. That's the purpose of darkness, to hide those things that would otherwise be easily seen. So when we were created, there was only light. There was nothing that man had to go and find out for himself about God, because God was coming and making Himself known. And there was nothing that we needed to hide from God, because man knew that we were fully known by God. Sin created the darkness. And now living in darkness leads us to sin. Our response to Jesus must be to follow Him out of our darkness and into His marvelous light, as 1 Peter chapter 2, verse 9 calls it. So what does it mean to follow Jesus? The Greek word that's used here in John chapter 8, verse 12 is akoluetho. Struggling with this one today. Akoluetho. and it means to be in the same way with or to join someone as their attendant. So Jesus was saying that anyone who comes alongside him, who seeks to serve him, who is willing to join him, who chooses to walk this way with him, shall not walk in darkness. See, following Jesus doesn't just remove our sin. First, it has to remove darkness so it can expose our sin. For sin to be forgiven, it has to be confessed. And for sin to be confessed, it first must be exposed. This is the part that we dislike about drawing near to Jesus, because he begins revealing our hearts to us. And some of that is sin, but some of that is brokenness. Some of it is stuff that we have buried or that we've decided, you know what? I don't want to deal with it, or I'm not going to deal with it, or I've made it far enough without it. And he begins, the nearer we get, the more he brings up, because it's not just our sin that has to be healed. It's the sin that's been done to us. It's the things that we've endured, the things that we've suffered, the things that society has placed upon us. And so getting near to Jesus doesn't just say, you're a sinner. Getting near to Jesus says, there's healing available for all of your hurts. There is strength available for all of your weakness. There is even a hammer of his love available to break through all of our hardness. But we have to be willing to let him get close enough to shine a bright light on things we'd rather keep covered, or we'd rather just explain about ourselves. Guys, walking in darkness explains why we are the way we are. Walking in darkness has excuses, has defenses, has thoughts about, well, if it wasn't for this, or if it wasn't for that, or this is just the way. Those are all statements of darkness, because they keep us the way we've always been. And the light comes to make us what we were always meant to be. Following Jesus gives him the freedom to shine his great light upon us. It is our prayer that he search us and that he know our hearts, that he test us and know our anxious thoughts. But walking in the light doesn't reveal the sin of others. And this is what I want us to see clearly before we move forward. Walking in the light doesn't now make me the one who gets to identify the sin that's going on in everyone else's life. Maybe I will identify sin that's been done to me, and that's for me to deal with, not for me to hold them responsible for or to judge them over. It's for me to be healed from. But walking in the light doesn't somehow open our eyes and now we see all the great sin that's going on around us. It reveals our sin. It reveals sin's effects on our hearts and our lives. See, the scribes and the Pharisees, they were walking in darkness. They were walking in a darkness that made them believe that they were eligible to call out the sins that they saw in others. They were able and even called to be the ones who identified and held others accountable for their own sins. But what Jesus' light revealed was they were capable of seeing the others because they had no interest in seeing their own sin. So they had turned not just from the light, but they were so comfortable in darkness that it hid their sin while it showed the sin of others. And so what does walking in the light do? It changes that entire dynamic where, think about the miracle that happened just a few verses earlier. Men who came angry, enraged, ready to kill this woman, dropped their stones and walked away. Why? Because the light of Jesus revealed the condition of their own hearts. They didn't want to forgive her. They just understood they were in need of forgiveness. They didn't change their mind about the law. They just knew that they were now condemnable. The only thing that changed in them was not what she had done or what they thought about her, but how they viewed themselves. That's what the light does. We don't need the light to come show us what the world is like. We need the light to come and show us what we are like so that we can live differently in the world. Because once we know we need grace, we can receive grace, which will then lead us to give grace. Matthew chapter 5, verse 7. Says, blessed are the merciful. Why? For they shall receive mercy. But you know how we teach it? We teach it the opposite of what Jesus said. We teach it this way. Blessed are those who have received mercy, for they shall become merciful. But it's backwards. We have to choose to be merciful so we can see the mercy that's been offered to us. It's not just the merciful that overflow. It's those who become merciful who then begin receiving what God has for them. I can believe in the mercy of God when I start giving mercy toward others. And so when I live to see your sin, when I live to see how bad the world is, how terrible our culture is, how sinful it is, I can't even get mercy from God because I'm not seeing it as an option. The Pharisees and Sadducees, the scribes, the leaders were living in darkness, which caused them to be able to easily recognize the sin of others while they buried their own sin. We cannot walk with Jesus and walk in darkness. We cannot walk with Jesus and walk in judgment. We're not going to get to it till next week. But if you look just a few verses ahead to where we read in the text, Jesus said that He has all judgment, but He judges no one. If He has the judgment and withholds the judgment, how is it that those of us who have no judgment keep giving it? How do we live in this world where we actually want people to get what they deserve when we don't even have the authority to want that? It shows that we're not merciful, which means we haven't tasted fully of God's mercy yet. We may be glad we're forgiven, but we do not understand what forgiveness is supposed to do in the change of our hearts and our lives, the way we think and the way we treat others. This is all, this whole idea of light and darkness, this whole idea of not walking in darkness is very similar to what Solomon wrote about in Proverbs chapter 3, where he says, "Trust in the Lord with all your heart and lean not on your own understanding, but in all your ways acknowledge Him and He will make your path straight." While Jesus calls us to follow Him, trust requires that we come alongside. When we trust someone, we are joining ourselves to them. We are making ourselves vulnerable, letting them in. This is why broken trust is so painful to us, because the trust that was broken was given freely. I chose to trust you. You didn't come and take my trust. I gave it. That's why when trust is broken, we get so offended, because we're angry with ourselves. We're ashamed of ourselves. I might be mad at you for what you did, but what I'm really angry at is me. I trusted you. How many times have you said that to someone when they broke your trust, or you've said it about them, but I trusted you, because it's a choice that has to happen. You didn't come get trust. I gave it because of what I expected. I gave it because of what you've shown from me. And this is what Solomon is telling us. Give trust to God. Don't think that He can earn it. He's already trustworthy. Give it to Him. Give it freely. Give it vulnerably. Give it completely, because then you'll be able to walk in the light that He has provided for us. Solomon was writing, join yourself to God, put your heart in His hands, depend upon Him for every aspect of your life, and when you do, He will reveal what is crooked, twisted, and broken. And then, after they are revealed, He will make those things straight, untangled, and whole. I love the idea of Him straightening my crooked places. I just hate the idea of Him showing me the crooked places in the first place. Why can't He just fix it without talking to me about it? Why does it have to all be revealed in me before He starts taking it out of me? Because He's faithful. Because He's good and kind. Because that's what love does. That's what light does. And so I encourage you today, if you are seeing yourself in ways you don't want to be seen, know that that's so that God can heal you in ways that you didn't know you could be healed. His desire is to bring you to healing. But He has to first shine a bright light. Shining a light in our darkness and making our path straight must always begin with revealing what is off before it can begin to make it right. We must trust His love enough to endure our exposure, or we will never persevere until He provides us with healing. This is another reason some of us quit so easily. Why we're good starters but rare finishers. Because we're willing to acknowledge, okay, God, change has to happen. But then He starts starting to show us what needs to be changed. And rarely, rarely is it what we thought. Most of us think that, you know, we need something around us. And He keeps going deeper and deeper within us. And why do we quit? Because it hurts. Why do we quit? Because I don't want to go this far. We've all been to a doctor. And when he started, thought, you know what, this wasn't the best idea. Amber just had her wisdom teeth removed. We've been talking about it because we share a fear. I don't want to say unhealthy, because I think dentists are unhealthy. It's the kind of person that chooses dentistry is the way of life. I have questions about that person's moral fortitude. But anyway, every time I go to the dentist and they start, I think, this was a bad idea. I should not have come. I should not have done this. And if I had the option, I would get up and leave. But once you're there and it started, you know you're not going to. The thing is, God gives us the option. And how many times does he start a work in us that we remove ourselves from? How many times does he start to change something in our hearts and our minds and our character and our lives and our relationships? And we say, yes, God. And then he shows us what the change costs. And we say, I don't want to give that up. I don't want to let that go. How many times do we try to moderate when he's trying to take it away completely? How many times does he want to deliver and we just want to live in moderation? You know, a little bit. If the scripture says all things in moderation, you know how much we abuse that? All things in moderation unless moderation kills you. All things in moderation unless what we're dealing with is idolatry rather than something that you think is just no big deal. These things have become part of our heart. We've given them our affection. And so when God starts saying, you can't have that, we start saying, but I should be able to have that. At least a little. At least a little bit. I know my personality well. And so when people ask me about my weight loss and my changes I made in my life, I tell them very honestly, there is not a single thing that I used to eat that I continue to eat. Not one. And there's nothing I eat now that I used to eat. Not one. It is completely different. So people usually ask me, what do you do? Because they want to see if they can do it too. And I always start with this. You don't want to know. Because I know me. And so I can't have an occasional. Because one turns into 10. I had to remove everything. Most of us are more like that than we like to admit. And when it comes to our heart condition, when it comes to the things we give our affection to, the things that we actually allow to compete with God for faithfulness, most of us need to have those things removed, not moderated. And the reason that we start well and finish rarely is because we're not willing to acknowledge this is an idol in my life. It's an issue, God calls it an idol. It's a problem, God calls it an idol. And until we're willing to acknowledge that there is room for no idolatry in our hearts and our lives, we will hold on to those things and we will continue to start well and finish rarely. How many times have we started the same project and have yet to come to its conclusion? Because there are idols living in us that only light can make known. And if we won't let him show us the light, we will never be able to see the life that we were meant to live. Jesus says that those who follow him won't walk in darkness because what we've been hiding will be exposed. But then he says, and this is the promise, that we will have the light of life. While we live to hide our hurts, our weaknesses, our shame, and our sin, we are also living unaware of what we're missing, unaware that we are not really living. We work so hard to not be seen that we usually can't see for ourselves, which means when the light begins to shine, we become defensive, which means we can't hear the truth about ourselves that might come from others. We become guarded, which means we can't open our hearts to those that God desires to use in our lives. We even become hardened, which means we don't even believe there is anything that we can or need to learn from others. We start explaining why they're wrong when they're showing us the wrongs of our own lives. Light doesn't only expose what we've been hiding, but it also reveals what we've been missing. And we are all missing more than we realize. No matter where you are in this process, there is more. More grace, more hope, more joy, more that God wants to do, and more promises that are yet to be fulfilled. And John chapter 10, verse 10, Jesus said, I have come that they may have life and have it abundantly. If I need to bring you something, isn't it because you don't have it yourself and you don't have access to get it yourself? Very few times, but a few times during the last 12, 13 years, however long my kids have been in school, I get a phone call from one of my kids from the office that says, Dad, I forgot my homework. Can you bring it to me? Whichever boy it was, he was asking because he didn't have the homework in his possession and he knew he would not be able to get to the homework on his own. So let me ask this. When Jesus says, I have come that they may have life, isn't he telling us that apart from him, we're not actually living? If he has to bring us life, doesn't it mean we not only that we don't have it, but we can't get it on our own? That no matter how hard we try, no matter how hard we fight, no matter how far we go, that this is a gift that has to be given. It is not something we can attain to. It is not something we have to figure out. It's not something that we build, but it's something that we have to open our hearts and our hands to receive. This means that when Jesus says, I have come that they may have life, he's telling us that apart from him, there is no actual life. It means that on our own, we are alive but not living. We are here but not present. We are involved but not included. We are living in darkness, and so we don't even realize how much we are missing. Jesus said that he is the light of the world and that walking with him gives us the light of life. Jesus doesn't simply show us the way. He is the way. I believe we must stop thinking of life as if God is hiding things that he wants us to go and find, as if there's these great mysteries that need to be uncovered, these great secrets that need to be understood, these great treasure maps that need to be followed and fulfilled. But we have to come to realize that we are the ones doing all of the hiding. God is the one who makes everything clear. We're not on a treasure hunt. He is leading us out of darkness and into light. He is not the darkness that we need to uncover. Forgive me for a minute, but we've got to stop with all of this foolishness where we're trying to uncover deep things. We are the deep things that need to be uncovered. They're living in our hearts and our lives. He has made himself clear. He has made himself plain. How much more clear could God be? He gave us his word and his spirit. How much more known could he make himself want to be? If we don't use either one of them, that's on us. But there is no mystery to be found. He has shown us the way. We either walk in it or we don't. We either choose to see him as he's made himself known, or we continue to make him something we want him to be, rather than understanding who he actually is. He's exposing our hearts so that he can show us his. He's breathing life into us so that he can remove death from us. We read it earlier at the end of worship, but Psalm 84 verse 11 says, "For the Lord God is a sun and a shield. The Lord gives grace and glory. No good thing does he withhold from those who walk uprightly." To walk uprightly means to walk unimpaired, unhindered, and uncovered. It's not talking about perfection. It's rather talking about integrity. It's not being without fault, but rather being without excuse, without defense, and without hiding. God's heart is to withhold nothing from us. So God's will is not a dark thing to be discovered. It is the light that dispels the darkness that we have all been living in. Peter wrote at the end, near the end of his first letter, that it is time for judgment to begin at the house of God. This means that it's time for the light to dispel the darkness, for the people of God to be uncovered and unafraid, to allow our hearts to be exposed so that the life that we were created to live can be revealed. Forgive me for a minute if you think this sounds harsh, but many of us are trying to hold on to a life that is not actually life at all. We're trying to figure out how to have Jesus in one hand and what we've always wanted in the other. We're trying to have as much light as possible while we still have a little darkness, because we're afraid that somehow the light will hurt our eyes or the light will change our lives too much. And we don't want to be changed too much because of what we might be missing. Haven't you ever thought, I deserve a little of this? Not understanding what we're trading for it. You know, Esau was right. He came in from hunting. He'd worked hard. He'd hunted. He'd probably killed game. That was not just for him, but for his whole family. He was right when he came in and said, "What good is a birthright if I die of starvation?" He was right. I deserve a bowl of your stew. What kind of a brother withholds food from a hungry brother? You know, for just a second, let's look at Jacob and Esau together. Esau was sinful in the decision that he made. But the feelings he had are feelings I have, feelings you have. And from a worldly point of view, he's right. I've been out working and slaving. I've been out in the outdoors. I'm tired. You made a bowl of stew, a pot of stew. I'm sure there's more than one bowl. I'm sure that if I get one, there's still plenty for you to have one. Stop opening the door to trade your birthright because you deserve something right now. Even if you deserve it, what if it's robbing you of what God has for you? Even if you're right in your thinking, you can be wrong in what you're trading. To believe that God has something better than what I'm holding on to right now. To even believe that I might be letting go of something better than what I'm grabbing for right now. He withholds no good thing from his people. He wants us to see that there's more to life than we understand it. We are often trying to hold on in places of our thinking and feeling and believing that are actually holding us down when Jesus came to set us free. And so I ask you this morning, what are we missing? We're missing an abundance. We're missing peace that is beyond measure rather than peace that comes when we need it. We're missing joy that is unspeakable rather than joy that has to have situations just so that we can feel it. We're missing hope that actually believes there is no other shoe that's going to drop. There is no complication that's going to come up at the last minute. We're missing love, the knowledge and assurance that we are loved, not because of what we've done, but because of who He is. We're missing strength that endures weakness, not strength that has to pretend we don't have weakness. We're missing comfort that leads us through grief, not some sort of comfort that keeps us from grief. We are missing what Jesus lived in. Just look at the life of Christ. Take some time to sit and read the Gospels and look at Jesus the man. We're missing so many things that He lived in. When all the disciples were about to run away from Jesus, to deny Him and retreat from Him, Jesus said, "You're all going to leave me alone." And what did He say? "But I'm not alone because my Father is with me." I'm missing that. Because when I get betrayed or when I get left or when someone moves away, I feel like I've lost something. And what Jesus was saying was, "You're going to leave me, but I know I'll never be left. And so I can endure until you come back." He wasn't saying it wouldn't hurt. He wasn't saying that He wouldn't feel the feelings. He was saying, "What I know is who I am and who is with me. And endurance will always bring me back to where God desires me to be." If we can't endure, we will never drink from the gifts that He has for us. Jesus was confident that He was not alone. He was never unsure. Even in our passage today, Jesus says several times throughout the Gospels, He says, "I know where I've come from and I know where I'm going." So that means death doesn't scare me because I know where I started and I know where I fission and where I finish. It means that rejection doesn't harm me because I know where I started and I know where I finish. All of the things that we live in fear of, Jesus lived in constant affirmation of one thing. I know what I need to know. What if you know what you need to know today? What if we spend our lives trying to figure things out we don't need to know? Instead of standing firm on what we are sure of. Why do I go back to it all the time? God is good and His love endures forever. Why do I try to reinforce that in my life and in your lives week after week after week? Because if we know those things, the rest of it, they're allowed to be variable. The thing that can't be variable is knowing who God is and knowing what God says over me. If I know those things, everything else can move and shake and be variable. It can be strong at times and weak at others. It can be present in times and absent in others. But if I know this, He is good and He loves me, everything else will line up eventually. Jesus knew things that we seem to not know. He was confident of who God was, which made Him confident of who He is. See, when I'm talking this morning about prosperity, when I'm talking about this thing that God has called us to, that Jesus came to give us life and to give it to us more abundantly, I'm not talking about simply getting something better than what you have. We have to say enough with this worldly and fleshly idea of prosperity. It's nonsense. We are missing eternal things. There is nothing eternal that hasn't been given to us, and yet we live so much of our lives trying to keep things that rot, that spoil, that we stop taking hold of things that are eternal. We have to let go of our desire that when one door closes, God opens a better door. That when one thing stops, that's just because God's got something better for you. What if the thing that stopped was keeping you from what God had for you? What if He wants to do something in our hearts that can't be done with the job that we've always had, or the friendships that we've always depended upon, or the house that we always lived in, or even the health that we think we need? What if the only way for intimacy to increase is for something in our lives to decrease? Didn't John the Baptist say it? I must decrease, He must increase. What if something dramatic has to change in our lives so that we can see the fullness of who He is and who He desires to be in us and for us? We have to be sure that we are prospering in the things we were created for, an intimacy with His love, an assurance and confidence in His character, the strong hand of God that is allowed, that we allow to bring both rebuke and affirmation, correction and confirmation, chastisement and change. If all God can do is tell you He loves you, you've missed so much of who God is. He has to be able to say you're wrong. He has to be able to say, though you're dark, I call you lovely. He has to be able to say, there is sin that we must deal with. I know David's sin is far more dramatic than we think that ours is, but all of us need an experience with God where He says, you are the man. Because until we have that experience, we're just carrying Him with everything else we've got. And once He says, you're the man, if we'll release, if we'll repent, if we'll let go the way David did, then He becomes everything that we have. And everything within us begins to change. We are enjoyed by God, but we are also being changed by God. He's different than us. He can enjoy those whom He also desires and needs to change. We have to have, and what we're missing is a true vision of His character. That's what the light has come to expose. This is who you are, but far more, this is who God is. And so I tell you today, if doors are closing in your life, God is not withholding things from you. He's leading you out of darkness and into His marvelous light. But I'll tell you just as surely, if doors are opening, it's not because you have found favor. I hate this saying, that we found favor. We've always been favored. Jesus died for us when we were sinners. He doesn't die for the unfavored. The death of Christ puts His favor upon all humanity. Whether we receive it or not is up to us. But the favor of God has been upon every one of us from the beginning. Let's stop trying to bring the ways and the ideas of earth and the ways of sinful man into the kingdom of God so that we can bring the kingdom of God into the world. These ideas that when something good happens, it's God's favor. It's fleshly. It's worldly. Because that means when something bad happens, it's not God's favor. But here's what I know. We're all favored. Why? Because when we were still sinners, Christ died for us. Because one died for all. Because when we were all unworthy, the worthy one died to take our place. What does that mean? The favor of God rests upon every human being ever. There's favor that comes from walking in Him. But the favor of God already rests upon us. So I tell you today, if doors are opening, it's because God is leading you out of darkness and into His marvelous light. Everything Jesus does is to bring glory to the Father and redemption to man. Everything Jesus does is to expose what's being hidden and to reveal what we've been missing. So this morning, we all need less darkness and more light. We all need to follow harder and trust farther. We all need the light because we are all lacking in some area of our lives. We are missing abundance in some area of our lives. If we're willing to let Jesus shine on us so that He can then shine in us and through us, we must give Him the freedom to expose our hearts, and we must be willing to let go of the life we've been hiding so that He can give us the life that we've been missing. Too many of us believe we've learned how to see in the dark. We've gotten comfortable with things being dim. Jesus came to return us to the place where nothing is hidden and everything can be sure. And so if we need direction today, if we need healing today, if we need clarity, if we need change, it all starts with the light. We cannot be hidden and whole. If we will allow ourselves to be exposed, we will be healed. Remember, God only exposes what He desires to heal, and He only shines His light on what He desires to bring to life. 1 Thessalonians chapter 5, verse 5 says, "You are all children of the light and children of the day. We do not belong to the night or to the darkness. So then, let us not be like others who are asleep, but let us be awake and sober." This morning, I want to ask us to open our hearts and to ask God to shine the light of Jesus on us, to expose what we've been hiding and to reveal what we've been missing. My prayer is that we will leave here today completely uncovered, with our hearts exposed and our eyes wide open. My prayer is that we can return to what we were created to be, where we can be naked and unashamed. Because remember this, even if you're hiding your nakedness, you're still naked. See, that's what hiding does. It keeps us where we've always been. But the moment that the light shines and we find out that we're naked, or others find out that we're naked, shame finally has an opportunity to be removed, because nothing gets healed in the dark. And so if God's dealing with your heart and God's dealing with your life, if God's dealing with your relationships, if God's dealing with you in any way, it is not because he is angry. It is not because you are under judgment. It is because there is more grace. And it is because he exposes what he desires to heal. And he cannot heal what we will not let him expose. Would you bow your heads with me today?